Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I am very happy to sit with you in meditation and to offer you this short talk before we do on the third of the four qualities that cultivate a mind of compassion in a crazy world. We started, of course, with quality number one, which is called affection for the world. And here, affection for the world doesn't mean I love everything and I love everyone, because there are certainly things and people to love, and there are things and people to not love. That's not possible. However, affection doesn't mean, oh, I like you, or oh, this is fine the way it is. Rather, it means agreeing within yourself to view the world and what you experience directly, rather than through the lens of aggression, which is how we normally view the world. Now, not saying you're a jerk and you're being super dominating or whatever, but here aggression means, I don't want this to be the way it is. I don't like it, which, you know, you have fully within your rights to feel that way. Or I really like this. I want to keep it. I want to hold on to it. So aggression means the act of continually vacillating between hope and fear. I don't want this. I don't like it. This is good for me. I like it. Again, both of those ways of thinking of things are practical and useful and human and no problem. But when we can put those things down and view circumstance and people first without those lenses, that is called affection for the world. The second quality that we talked about is called faith in the right situations. And that means viewing things, I would even say all things, as sacred, because they are. Not because they are sacred, but because they exist. Because the world is the way it is, we may think, well, spiritual things are what I do when I sit in my meditation practice or when I go to church, and then I go out into the real world, and that's mundane. That is not sacred. However, the right faith in the right situations, the right situation is always that all experience is sacred. All phenomena, all objects, all interactions have something sacred about them or are sacred, which doesn't mean, you know, angels singing and holier than thou. It just means intimate and real and direct. That is faith in the right situations, to see that quality in all that you experience. And then the third quality is called compassion for sentient beings, which doesn't mean, I'll just say it again, doesn't mean liking all sentient beings or feeling even kindly disposed toward all sentient beings. It means opening to all sentient beings, opening, beginning with yourself, of course, opening to all beings that you encounter. And sentient beings doesn't just mean human beings. It means animals and birds and fish and insects, anything that has a brain, basically. Having compassion, which again, doesn't mean being, I don't even know how to describe it. Doesn't mean being a sap. It means being awake so that you can see and take in who is in front of you, whether that who is a person or a cat or any other kind of sentient beings. It means experiencing. That's how I interpret it. Being willing to experience that being's presence. Sometimes I like what I experience, sometimes I don't. But that gesture of opening is the seed syllable, I would say, of compassion. And it begins, of course, with compassion for yourself, which is maybe the hardest sentient being of all to have compassion for, because we are all constantly beating ourselves up, exhorting ourselves, you should do more, you should be better, you should be more awesome, but you should have more goals. Oh, you accomplished that goal. Okay, now that goal sucks. You need another goal. We are very, very, very hard on ourselves. And often the is thought to be, well, stop doing that. Stop being hard on yourself, which is another way of being hard on yourself. Anything that involves going like this is aggressive, we should say. So we may try to counter our self-aggression with additional self-aggression, like cut it out. Okay, that's not going to work. So now what? How do we start with self-compassion for this sentient being so that I can more easily, more readily, in fact, organically and spontaneously have compassion for all sentient beings? Because it has to start here for some reason. So I'll tell you a little story about how I discovered what it meant to be compassionate toward myself. If you don't feel like hearing a story, you're welcome to just skip ahead to the meditation. This happened quite some time ago, maybe, I don't know, over a decade ago. I had written a book and it was weirdly successful. I didn't expect it. Who knows how that happened? But then I had this opportunity to write another book because the first book worked. So then some people are like, hey, here's some money. Want to write another book? I'm like, okay. I'd never written anything before. But the first thing was like home run out of the gate. And that never happened again in my life so far, by the way. So I ended up signing with this particular publisher in New York. And I started working on this book. And they hated it. They hated it. They're like, I won't go into the reasons why. They hated it. And I'm like, okay, well, I thought I was writing what we had agreed to, but let's get together and talk about it. And so I went to the meeting with my then agent. I'm like, here's some ways you're describing this book. And here are the ways I'm describing this book. Let's see where we can meet in the middle. That seemed kind of reasonable to me. But the publisher, the head of the publishing company, the whole thing, stood up and said, I'm going to curse, so just get me a fucking manuscript that I like, and left. And that was that. So I don't know if you can, I'm sure you can imagine, but I could not have imagined the incredible self-aggression that I felt in that moment. You suck, shaming myself, you're blowing it, you had this big opportunity to, and you're effing it up, and okay, I hate that person, but they probably know what they're talking about, and I don't. And I'm like, oh my God, my whole future just disappeared, not to mention all of my dollar bills went with it. So I sort of stumble out of the publishing house, like, what the hell just happened? I'm falling apart, because I was. And lo and behold, I look up and I see my dear friend, Michael Carroll, who some of you I think know. He's an incredibly wonderful Buddhist teacher and the author of many books on mindfulness at work. His first was Awake at Work and The Mindful Leader. And he's a tremendous human being. Love him so much. Boom, there he was right in front of me. He didn't live in New York City. Whoa. And then he saw me. He's like, okay, let's go to lunch. And I said to him, my practice, because at this point I've been a practitioner for probably over 10 years, must be so weak if one asshole, I believe I said asshole, can just knock me off my seat so completely and make me hate myself and life and him. And all the things, where's my equanimity? So what Michael Carroll said was, so you think that not getting upset is a sign of progress in your practice? And I said something like, yes. And he said, no, it isn't. The sign of progress is how quickly can you bring your attention to exactly what you feel. The more readily you can do that, the more directly you can go towards your experience, not the story of your experience, I'm a jerk, you're a jerk, that kind of thing, but the feeling of the experience. That will be the indicator of the strength of your practice. Thank you, Michael Carroll. I will never forget that. That was a great lesson. And I'm sharing it with you because compassion for all sentient beings has something to do with bringing your attention to what is and who is, beginning with this one. Can you lean in, as they say, can you experience yourself, who you really are, your genius, your craziness, your brilliance, your chaos, everything that's great about you and everything that's a mess? Can you open to that? That is what we're talking about here as the quality that cultivates compassion in a crazy world. First towards yourself, as Michael Carroll explained to me very well. And then you don't have to do anything else. I mean, it's very hard when you run into people that you think are horrible. Additional effort may be required not to like them. Not to like them, but to open to who they are. With all of your responses that are legitimate, you don't have to like them. I just want to say that again. How quickly can you open to what is? That is the journey that we're on to cultivate the mind of compassion in a crazy world. And as I was saying, when you're able to do that for yourself, you kind of don't have to do anything else, although you do. But basically speaking, the way we're wired is when I soften to myself, which doesn't mean like myself, it means open to my experience as it is, organically, it seems, I'm able to do that for others. When I can't do it for myself, I can't do it for others. Why? I don't know. You're going to have to ask someone else. I have no idea. But that's one of the many reasons why it's so important to cultivate compassion for yourself. A, it's good for yourself. But B, it lays the foundation. It opens the door to compassion for all beings. So how you work with yourself, how you hold your own mind, is in many ways how you will relate to others, especially those we're really close to, weirdly. That's a different story. So please work with yourself to be kind to yourself, which means to experience who you are and what you feel. Everything begins with you. And self-knowledge. And the willingness to look. It takes bravery. Now, how do we do this? How do we get to this place where we are willing to look at ourselves? I'm fixing to do it. It's called the practice of meditation. Shamatha Vipassana is our practice, or mindfulness awareness meditation, which is another way of saying it is you sit there and you are yourself. So we're going to do that right now. The practice, as you know, or we'll find out if this is your first time, and if so, welcome. It's great that you're here. The practice includes a technique. It begins with a technique. You take your posture in a certain way. You place your attention on the breath, which is convenient because it's already there. You let your mind be as it is. I'll explain this in more detail when our practice starts. And then you get distracted, come back. That's all. That's the whole thing. The technique, however, mindfulness of body, mindfulness of breath, mindfulness of mind, the technique is not the practice. The technique sets up the practice, which is you, being you, period. So the technique is of vast importance, but it is not the practice. The practice is you being you. On behalf of all beings, I thank you for being willing to do that. Okay, let's sit together. Please begin by forgetting everything I just said or everything you thought about what I just said and establish your posture. The legs are crossed loosely in front of you, or if you're in a chair or seated on the couch, you could sit with your feet flat on the floor, unless that hurts. Basically, the idea is to find a way to sit comfortably and upright. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. Let the belly be very soft. Nothing to hold on to. Soften the area around your heart. And let the shoulders relax. That's my favorite part. The chin is tucked a little bit, so the back of the neck is long. And the mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth can be slightly parted. And you can enjoy your own silence. You can let all the muscles of speech relax because you don't need them right now. The tongue, the jaw, the throat, the inclination to speak can also relax. Nothing to contribute or justify or explain. None of that. There actually is no one in here talking. If you take a look, it is quiet. So you can just rest in your own quiet. The breath is natural in and out through the nose, which means there is no breathing technique because you're already a genius at breathing. So you can just keep doing that. Breathing in and out through the nose, unless you have a cold. The eyes are open, and the gaze is very soft and cast down to a spot in front. And rather than laser focusing on a particular point, let the whole visual field in, end to end. Let the forehead soften and the crown of the head reach up a little bit. Now let your attention come to rest on the breath, which means feel the breath, not notice the breath. Feel the inhale and the letting go of the exhale. Breathing in and out, and feeling the body breathe. Your mind will continue to make thoughts because that's what it does, like the eyes see or the ears hear. The mind produces thought. No big deal. Most of your thoughts will just come and go. You don't have to do anything about them. Should you notice that you've been carried away by thought, become absorbed in thought, to the point where you've forgotten about your breath, good. You just woke up and saw what was going on. So the instruction is to notice that you're thinking, touch the thought, as it were, with your attention. And feel its texture for a split second. It's wispy, it's sparky, it's close, it's far, whatever it may be. Label it thinking, and then just let go. Just let go. Gently come back to the breath and begin again, feeling the body breathe. This is our practice, and we'll sit together for a few more minutes until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. And thank you for practicing together.